You're listening to the Locked In Podcast. Here's your host, Algernon Cash.
I'm Algernon Cash, and you're locked in. Welcome back for yet another great conversation this week. COVID continues to surge across the country and has certainly triggered some new fears and concerns about vaccines and mask wearing and a lot of things that we all hoped was behind us and that we were no longer having to worry about. It seems like, again, we're back in a similar spot that we were in about 12 or 8, well, maybe not the same spot, but a similar spot to 12 months ago, being concerned about mask wearing, social distancing, whether or not our kids can go to school. Just so many big questions about our normal lifestyle. And not too long ago, I had Dr. Christopher Ohl back on the show. He's been very kind to us over the last year and a half to share time. Dr. Ohl is a top infectious disease expert with Wake Forest Baptist Medical Center here in town. And he came on and sort of shared what I would call his perspective as it relates to COVID and the variants and the mask wearing and et cetera. But I will always pride myself when we do these locked in conversations, I always pride myself on really offering a full view and different sides and different perspectives of the same issue. And so I've got a good friend here in town. If you haven't met him, I encourage you to go by his practice. But Dr. Wiggy Saunders, who is with Robin Hood Integrative Health, located on Robin Hood Road right here in Winston-Salem. Not to mention, is he a good friend, but he's a great family practitioner practicing medicine here. Got a great family, great wife. Big shout out to Emily. I know she's listening. He's also hosts a podcast here in town as well. So I know he'll tell you a little bit more about that. Dr. Saunders, thank you for locking in, man. How are you?
I'm doing well, Algernon. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, no, happy to be here. You know, Algernon, I think it's good for us to have conversations. You know, it's always good to chat with you. And these are some important things to talk about. You know, I think there's a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety going around right now. And I think it's important for us to just have these discussions.
Well, I appreciate you having the conversation before we jump into it, because I know when I first met you and I heard the term integrative health and wellness. So the first time I really heard it, and for my audience, maybe they may not know a lot about it too. So just help us understand what is integrative health and wellness? What would be the difference between if one of my audience members visited you or visited a more traditional Sure. family practitioner?
Yeah, and that might be good to give a little background on myself too. So I am traditionally trained, and so I went to Wake Forest undergrad, Wake Forest Medical School. So I am a physician and MD. But integrative medicine is a different perspective. So with traditional medicine, a lot of times what we kind of run into is kind of this, you know, pilfer and ill mentality. You know, you have a disease, I'm going to give you this medication for this disease. With integrative medicine, we just look at things a little bit differently. So we want to try and figure out if there are some underlying root causes for the symptoms and try to address those underlying root causes. And if you fix those, then a lot of times the disease will take care of itself. And then beyond that, with integrative medicine, we really try to be a little bit more proactive with things. So, you know, especially with things going on with COVID, we try to be more proactive with treating, trying to prevent the disease if we can, try to prevent people from going to the hospital. And by being a little bit more proactive, I think we have a little bit more of a comprehensive approach for certain things.
Well, no, I it's what it sounds like to me when I hear you, and obviously you use a lot of technical jargon, I'm gonna break it down, but you try to keep people off drugs and maybe try to help them show them ways that they can treat a lot of these causes more naturally.
Well, for sure. So yeah, so we're not necessarily just naturalists. We won't just do only natural things or only supplements. We try to kind of look at the best of both worlds. So we look at the best of medicine, all that, you know, Western medicine has to offer, and then we also look at the best of natural things and try to pick between those to figure out what is the best for each person.
Now I like it. I'd like the approach as well, but to kick a little bit into, the COVID discussion, like I said, I mean, this whole surge around the Delta variant, I think has certainly triggered a new round of fear and anxiety. If you're a small business owner, you're very concerned about potential shutdowns and restrictions once again. Yeah. And then also, you know, there are people dying, and you know, we also have to be very concerned about that. You know, yeah. I know for me, Dr. Saunders, my daughter just started back to school. And I will say this too, because I just found this out over the weekend. My daughter has COVID, and she just went back to ECU. Just actually the first day of school was today, but she's in quarantine. She's in a 10-day quarantine. And so she can't leave a room. So the first time she's ever left home, and now she's in Greenville, you know, 2-3 hours away. She's stuck in a room somewhere because she's got COVID. Is it really safe for us to have kids going back to school right now?
I definitely think it's safe for kids to be going back to school. I mean, I think that, you know, especially if we look at the risk, the variables for kids that are going back to school, younger kids, and I would say college students as well, you know, they are not a high risk population. College students, you know, they're healthy. Most of the time, they don't really have any chronic medical conditions. You know, if they get sick, just like with your daughter being sick, you know, I pray that she does well, but almost always they do well. And the younger the kids, they do extremely well. So if you look at the mortality data on kids that are less than, you know, 18, they have a 99.997% survival rate. So almost everybody that gets COVID in a younger generation and those demographics, almost everybody does extremely well. The only ones that really struggle are those that have some major medical problems. Those that kind of maybe were born with a lung disorder, or they were born with a strange, you know, chromosomal abnormality. Those are the ones that really struggle. With the younger people, but healthy kids, healthy college students, they almost always do extremely well with this, and really mild symptoms almost always.
Well, and I want to say this before I start getting all types of messages on Facebook and text messages and so forth about people asking me how if my daughter's doing okay.
Yes, she is doing fine. I want to know how she's doing.
Yeah, she's doing fine. She's not demonstrating any symptoms. You know, I've been checking in on her day by day, so she is doing fine. You know, I think that begs a different question, because, you know, my daughter and I, we hung out, you know, right. I won't say the name of the restaurant because I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but we hung out right before she left to go to ECU. She has had one shot of the vaccine. She had not completed the second one. And now they're going to make her wait because she has COVID. We did go out to eat. You know, the restaurant was busy. You know, she didn't have a mask on. She obviously, you know, apparently she did have COVID, wasn't demonstrating any symptoms. Is this a good case for why we ought to require people to wear masks?
Mm. Yeah, Al John, it's people like you and your daughter that are spreading the virus. It's your fault. No, so I mean, I'm
wondering. I mean, I'm saying, is that's a legitimate question, though, right? I mean, like, she easily could have spread the virus in that restaurant. I hope she didn't, but, you know, obviously we were sitting together alone, but I think that's a legitimate question. I mean, maybe the reason you get a Dr. Old that argues that everybody should be wearing masks again.
Well, so, I mean, the numbers are definitely increasing. We're seeing, you know, a lot more people getting sick with coronavirus, and it's almost entirely the Delta variant at this point. We're seeing, I think, primarily the Delta. But I think, you know, your situation that you described with your daughter is actually probably a pretty good example why things may be slightly exaggerated as far as the risk go. So you were with your daughter in close contact for a long period of time. You know, yes, you're not necessarily out of the incubation period, but you're not having any symptoms. And we don't necessarily know if anyone that you were around were having symptoms. But the question that really brings up is, what is the risk for asymptomatic spread? What is the risk for someone without symptoms to spread the virus to somebody else? And that's a pretty complicated question. But again, it's important to distinguish between asymptomatic and symptomatic. So symptomatic means she's, you know, feeling terrible and coughing. She shouldn't be around people. And I think in that case, there may be some validity in wearing a mask. But asymptomatic spread has really been pretty well researched now that asymptomatic spread really doesn't happen. There's either not enough viral load for people to spread the virus. And if you're not symptomatic, you're not going to be passing this on to people. You know, there was a pretty big study out of Florida that looked at, you know, people that had coronavirus and if they're asymptomatic versus symptomatic and who was spreading the virus. And that's the best study we have to look at who's spreading it. And it was like 99.3% of all cases that were spread in Florida were from symptomatic cases. Only 0.7% were spread by asymptomatic cases. And that in that 0.7%, the confidence interval included 0%. So it's possible that asymptomatic spread doesn't contribute at all to the spread of the coronavirus. And so, like I said, if we're trying to say, should everybody universally wear a mask? I think it's hard to make that argument that asymptomatic people should necessarily wear a mask, because again, that's pretty much been disproven at this point. I mean, if you're going to take the argument for everyone wearing a mask because you don't trust anybody, and that, you know, everyone just needs to wear it because we can't trust people to make a decision if they're symptomatic or not, that's a different discussion. But as far as asymptomatic people wearing a mask, like, you really can't make that argument because the science doesn't support that.
Yeah, that's a really good argument that you make. You know, I hear what you're saying. You're basically saying if you are demonstrating some type of symptoms, you should be smart and use common sense and maybe put on a mask or, you know, social distance yourself, or perhaps maybe even make the decision not to go out if that's depending on if you want to self quarantine, I guess is probably the better phrase for that.
Right.
I mean, are we making these decisions for people because we don't trust them to make these decisions? Is that what's going on?
I think we have to be, because like I said, the science behind asymptomatic spread, again, is pretty solid. It does not appear to be happening. I mean, I think a bigger discussion, you know, from a mask standpoint is, you know, do our masks really effective for decreasing viral transmission? And you know, the question could even be expanded to say, do masks work for people that are even symptomatic? There's even that you can even make that argument. So I think the best way to kind of nail that down for, you know, what makes the most sense for people to do, I think if you're symptomatic, I think you should be wearing a mask. I think that doesn't make sense. If there's any evidence that could potentially help, that people really shouldn't be going around without a mask. But again, for asymptomatic people that are healthy, especially you already had COVID, you know, you're not showing any symptoms, it doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense. I mean, we could do a whole series on, you know, looking at the effectiveness of masks for viral transmission, and looking at the effectiveness in particular of cloth masks for viral transmission. And we can have a discussion as far as that, are we really seeing any effectiveness for that? And even that is kind of a hard argument to make when you look at the bigger studies for masks. The cloth masks don't really appear to do much. The N95s may, the surgical masks probably not. Cloth masks, there's really no good evidence that cloth masks help. But again, that's what everyone is wearing. And so that also kind of raises the question, is why is everyone wearing a cloth mask when the cloth mask appears to be the least effective for preventing spread?
It also seems like more and more municipalities and government and even some small business owners are just making this decision independently, mandating people to wear masks when they come in their business. I know here in the city of Winston-Salem, the mask mandate has been, you know, re-implemented. I think they're talking about it at the county level. I know they've done it over in Guilford County. But what I hear from you is that's not necessarily a solution, you know, to the problem. Mm. So but also hear that if we can't trust these people to make these decisions on their own, we've got to do something. So if it's not mask wearing, then what should we be doing? Or should we be mandating anything?
Well, and I said, I don't think that there's no role for mask use. I think there can be potential role for that, especially again, for people that are symptomatic. But I think the problem that I'm seeing with this whole mask discussion is that a lot of people are coming with such certainty in their opinion that we can't even have a discussion about other things that we can be doing. You know, so if people believe that masks work, they are certain that masks work, even if they haven't necessarily reviewed the literature themselves. You know, I've reviewed hundreds of studies and I've spent, you know, hours studying this, and I feel like I have a pretty good grasp on the literature, but people are coming with such strong opinions, again, without even reviewing the data themselves. And so it stagnates us that we only get stuck on talking about masks as being the only thing. And I think that's one of the issues. We shouldn't just be talking about masks. We should be talking about other things that we can be proactive in our health. You know, one good example would be vitamin D. So there are good studies on vitamin D. And if your levels are sufficient or optimal, you'll have about it's been estimated anywhere from 80% reduction in hospitalization if you have good vitamin D levels. That's a good study that shows that this is very effective for reducing your chance of getting sick. I would probably say even better study for that than there is necessarily even for masks. And why aren't those studies being talked about? I mean, there are good studies out there that show the vitamin D is great for COVID. And that's one of the things that we do is we make sure everyone's vitamin D levels are fantastic. And that's probably part of the reason why for us, and this is not necessarily bragging, but we've had fantastic results with our coronavirus cases. We probably treated at least 500 people, maybe 1,000 at this point, with being proactive and then doing some active treatment. And we've had, I think, 3 hospitalizations and no deaths out of close to 1,000 people. It's because we're proactive. We do things like vitamin D. We're also proactive with treating. So we treat early on in the course, and all of our patients have done well. And so it's kind of frustrating when there are things that we can be doing, but we're stuck on masks and we're stuck on vaccines. And that's all that people talk about now.
If you're just now joining us, I'm Algernon Cash. You are locked in. The other voice you hear with me locked in is Dr. Wiggy Saunders. He is a family practitioner at Robin Hood Integrative Health right here in Winston-Salem, located on Robin Hood Road. And we're just having a conversation about the most recent surge in COVID cases and just how we're responding to that surge. And obviously you're hearing renewed calls for mask wearing, as well as a lot of other ideas around mandating vaccines, and you can't go in certain places without a vaccine. So there's a lot of things happening. You know, Dr. Saunders, I think one of the most profound things you've said in our entire conversation is centered around the fact that we can't have a conversation. Mm-hmm. And the situation has gotten so emotional that we can't seem to have any type of back and forth. So if you say that you don't believe masks work, well, then all of a sudden the person on the other party is completely shut down and doesn't really want to listen. I know from knowing you, I mean, you're a good friend. You've also ran into some opposition and some obstacles here locally, trying mm-hmm. to talk about COVID and the way we respond to COVID. You know, you're a doctor. They say that we should be following the science. I'm listening to you. Sounds like you're following the science. How do we get people to have a larger mm-hmm. conversation about COVID? What do we do? How do we get someone like you and someone like Dr. Ohl, who probably doesn't quite agree with everything you've said today? How do we get y'all talking more?
Gosh, that's a tough question. And I don't even know who necessarily needs to be having the conversations, because I don't know if getting a group of doctors together would actually make a lot of progress. I see this as actually a bigger cultural problem than even coming from authorities and coming from doctors. It's more of a cultural problem than I'd say it even from an educational standpoint. I think that I see the biggest issue is that we're running into a mindset of certainties when the certainties aren't there. And so people are claiming that I know 100% certain that masks work, and so I'm not going to have a conversation with you because you must be wrong. And so I would actually say for anyone listening, regardless of which side of the aisle that you fall down as far as what you believe, is that we should always be asking, and this is something, again, for doctors too, I think we should always be asking, is it possible that I'm wrong? Is it possible that I'm wrong on the effectiveness of masks? Is it possible that I'm wrong on the safety of a vaccine? Is it possible that I'm wrong on the effectiveness of the vaccine? And until we can get people doing that, we're not going to get anywhere. So if you sit down with, myself and let's say Dr. Ohl, and if neither of us can say it's possible that I'm wrong, then we're just going to, agree to disagree and just we won't get anywhere. So until I think as a culture, we can start saying, we can't be certain about this. We cannot be certain about a new pandemic that we've never seen before. We can't be certain on the effectiveness of masks because the science goes both ways. And I'd have to say, actually, if you look at the science, the randomized controlled trials, the science actually supports that masks don't really help a whole lot. And that's what the science tells us. Same thing with, like I said, with vaccines. You know, the science on the vaccines, they go both ways. Yes, there is evidence that it helps for sure, but there's also evidence that it causes harm. And so we should be having these discussions like, okay, what is most likely the truth? And until people start thinking, okay, what is most likely the truth after looking at both sides, we're going to be spinning circles.
You know, Dr. Saunders, I do want to move the conversation in that direction. You brought in the conversation around vaccines, and that's another hot button item. I will tell you that I've moved back and forth myself on that issue, whether or not I thought everyone should take it. Obviously, I do think it's an independent choice. And I do think, you know, even for those people who may be deciding not to take the vaccine, if you're catching COVID, then you're actually going through the vaccination process, whether you wanted to or not. And my daughter was someone who was also very against the idea of doing the vaccine. And I felt like she had reached an age where she should be able to make that choice on her own. She did decide to do the vaccine. But I will say that was mostly motivated by the fact that ECU told her that she would get quarantined if she didn't have the vaccine, and because she didn't get that second shot, she still got quarantined. So part of what she was trying to prevent didn't quite work. So I think people have been all over the spectrum when it comes to the vaccine.
I
want to get your comment there. But then the other thing I'm starting to see is more businesses, private businesses. There's a couple of restaurants in North Carolina that have done this. I know Ramcat here in Winston-Salem just announced that if you don't have the vaccine card, you can't come in. How do you feel about this idea of one, you mandating vaccines, and then two, mandating you show that card before you enter a business?
How much time we have? So, you know, mandating, I think mandating a vaccine where you are forcing somebody to do something, even if they don't agree with it, I think is a slippery slope. Because a vaccine is something that you are putting into your body. And to have to, I would really say, coerce somebody into doing that by saying either you can't come to school here or you're going to be fired if you don't do that. I mean, that is a dangerous place to be, because then you're basically taking that bodily autonomy and throwing it out the window. That you are no longer in control of what you do or what you put into your body. Somebody else can dictate what that is. And so if a college can dictate that, or if a business can dictate that, I think, again, that's a dangerous proposition. And it really does come down to the bodily autonomy argument. You know, who has authority over our bodies? Do we have authority over what we do, what we put into our body? You know, I believe that God has authority over our bodies. He's given us these bodies as a gift. And so we have authority with him and how we handle it and how we steward our body. So to think that another organization or a business or a college has authority to do that, I think it's very dangerous. Now, they probably can say, well, you don't have to do it. You can be fired, which is true. But then that's coercion. You're basically saying you have to do it. Otherwise, you're going to be fired. And so it's the same thing that I was talking about with kind of the mask, is that people are making these decisions based on data that they feel are, this is established 100% science, that vaccines are the only way for us to get to herd immunity. And they're making that assumption. So everybody has to do it in order for the collective good. But that really neglects a lot of different variables. You know, one thing that I find also frustrating is that no one is talking about and no one is tracking how well natural immunity works compared to the vaccine. And so people are saying, and if the experts are saying, is that natural immunity is not very good. You're going to still need to get the vaccine because, you know, your natural immunity only lasts you a couple months. But that's false. Natural immunity is much better than vaccinated immunity. That is well established. Look at the countries that have the natural immunity and have the vaccinated immunity, and look at who's getting hospitalized. No one with natural immunity is getting hospitalized. Almost less than 1%. Nearly no one with natural immunity is getting hospitalized, but up to 40% of people are getting hospitalized that have the vaccine. So again, you can't say that natural immunity is not better than vaccinated immunity. Again, that's that I do feel pretty confident with. Again, we can't make absolute statements, but the evidence really supports natural immunity is better than vaccinated immunity.
Yeah, I recently noticed, I read in the Winston-Salem Journal that Hanes brand, local company, has given employees, I think, a couple of months to get vaccinated. If you don't get vaccinated, you could lose your job. So yep. you may not be working there any longer. Do we get into any kind of, I'm not a doctor and I'm not a lawyer, but do we get into any kind of HIPAA violations with companies saying, I mean, that you've got to show me this vaccination right. card or even a Ramcat. So I'm just going to have I just want to go to a show on a Friday night. But right. I've got to show some medical information to get in. Are we on a slippery slope in that regard, Dr. Saunders?
I believe we are on that slippery slope. And I think that is a HIPAA violation. I even think that, you know, asking for, you know, one thing that we're getting a lot of requests for is people asking for medical exemptions for this mandate. And these forms that we're having to fill out, they're asking for personal medical information on our patients. They're saying, okay, well, why can't they do it? List all their medical problems. And that should be a HIPAA violation because they didn't, you know, the patient didn't give the employee there or the employer the right to know what their personal medical information is. So the fact that they're, you know, requesting that and saying it's necessary for them to know that feels very intrusive to me, you know, because I mean, what if you don't want them to know all of your personal medical information? What if there's some sensitive stuff on there? Could they use that against you at some point? So that's where HIPAA laws were, you know, put into place, was to protect us from people that don't need that information that potentially can use it against us. So like I said, I think it's intrusive. I think it's irresponsible to be asking for personal medical information for anything. You know, I think people, if they are going to claim a medical exemption, you have to take them. You got to take them at their word. If they're going to claim a religious exemption, you got to take them at their word for that. And you have to, there has to be some trust that they're doing it, you know, for their, what they believe is a true exemption. But like I said, yeah, I think it's really scary that people are now asking for all this information when it's none of their business what their medical issues are.
Well, I'm almost certain that there's a really smart attorney listening to my show, and they are gearing up for some class action lawsuits, and you
it's
name it.
I think we'll
be having this conversation for a long time, and you know, unfortunately, some of these questions might get resolved and solved within the court system, which is oftentimes yeah. what does happen. I will say to my audience, first of all, I want to say to Dr. Saunders, thank you for locking in. I do think you provided some good insight. And certainly I'm not necessarily trying to pick winners and losers here. I just really wanted my audience to hear two perspectives of the same issue. And so you heard Dr. Christopher Ohl and what he thought about the issue. I do value Dr. Ohl. I actually served mm-hmm. with him on the mayor's COVID-19 task force together. But I also value you, Dr. Saunders. You bring a different type of perspective. I think you caused me to think about some things today, and I'm almost certain you caused some people in my audience to think as well. So I appreciate you stepping out. And you don't necessarily have the most popular opinion about the issue. And sometimes that can be a little
That's
tough.
The truth.
Trust, take it from someone who knows. Sometimes it can be a little hard to put yourself out there, even yeah. when you're not the most popular person when it comes to a certain issue. So I appreciate you you doing that. For my audience, if you did miss the episode with Dr. Christopher Ohl and you want to hear it, you can go to lockedin.cash. You can certainly check it out there. I always like to thank all my sponsors who support this show. I encourage you, if you have not already done so, make sure you go follow what we're doing on YouTube. I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter. So make sure you keep up with us there. You can always reach out to me if you have any show ideas. I'm always looking for ideas of different conversations I can bring to you. But we always appreciate you listening to Locked In right here on WTOB. Make sure you also keep checking out Eat, Drink, Triad, which broadcasts on WTOB on Sunday mornings. And you can hear my restaurant pick of the week every week on WTOB. Until next time, y'all stay locked in.
The executive producer of the Locked In podcast is Algernon Cash for WCG. The associate producer is Tim Beeman for Such and Such Media. The views and opinions in this podcast are solely those of the contributors and are not necessarily those of our distributors or hosting company. This podcast is copyrighted and cannot be reproduced without express written consent of WGC.